Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
What's up, guys? Wanted to give you a quick editor's note before we get to the 2019 rankings analysis. At the end, we talk about the recruitment news from the recent couple days, last week or so. We recorded this podcast, Ty and I did, before news of Graham Blake's and Sean Cameron's commitment to Harvard and Brennan Grimes' commitment to Johns Hopkins. Obviously, that's huge news in this world, and surely we'll be back next week with more analysis of what that means for all of the affected classes involved. So, without any further delay, we will dive right into the 2019s.
Welcome back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. Today, our sponsor is ZipRecruiter, and once again, I'm joined by Ty Zanders, and we are talking about recruiting. The 2018 recruiting issue content is winding down. Ty, we are on the nearly at the end of September. That means fall ball's upon us, and that means that we will transition into talking about everything related to fall lacrosse, be it college, high school, and recruiting as we get ready for the October prospect days and November recruiting moments. So let's take this opportunity to talk about the one class that we have not talked about on the podcast. That is the class of 2019. And to start, you know, one of the questions I want to ask is, really from, say, 2016 through 2018, there's been a lot of positivity around the groups coming out. And there's a lot of positivity around the 2020 class as well. For the last several years, this group in total has kind of considered to be a little bit down. I think that there's some truth to that, and I think that there's some kind of momentum to that point. Like, maybe it's a little overstated. What's your point of view on that?
Yeah, no, I think there's no doubt. Like, in my opinion, I feel like, you know, there are far fewer, you know, guys that kind of move the needle in this class comparison to the last, you know, five, six, seven. It's not to say that, you know, there aren't a ton of talented players in this, but I think that we'll have our hands full when it comes to picking the Under Armour game. And I don't know. I think there are just certain kids that I don't – when you put a five-star, you know, five-star list together, you want that kid to be an All-American. You know, you feel good about that. I feel like, you know, less so than other classes, you know, put it simply. So, you know, there's a lot of talent defensively and some guys who can score. I'm just kind of waiting to see, you know, how high they can go. You know, I'm really pumped to see how they do in college.
So let's start at the top. Connor Schellenberger checks in as the number one player for the second straight year. He's from Charlottesville, started his high school career at St. Anne's Belfield, spent last season at Bullis, won an IAC championship, was originally committed to Johns Hopkins, and is now currently committed to his hometown, Virginia Cavaliers. For me, when I think about Schellenberger, two things come to mind. Number one is speed. I think he's a very, very fast player. And number two is right-handed shooting. I think that the combination of his speed gives him a weapon in his shot on the run. But I also think that compared to a guy that's probably predominantly considered to be a Dodger ball carrier, he's a really good feet-set shooter as well. When I think about him, one player that comes to mind is a right-handed Ned Crotty, particularly because of his ability to operate from the low lefty spot and finish topside righty the way that Crotty used to do the inverse. Also, you know, and this is something that I probably shade toward more than a lot, but Crotty played midfield his first 2 years in college, and I think that Schellenberger has a skill set that suggests, I don't think it's going to happen, but he could do that as well. And I will say that I'm the type of guy that says a lot of attackmen can play midfield as needed. I think I said that about Brennan O'Neill the last time we talked about it. Tell me about your thoughts on Connor Schellenberger.
I think, you know, to me, and you know, I can't give myself credit in this comparison. It was a college assistant coach who, you know, is a great recruiter and has a great background. He's a lot like Matt Donowski, I think, in that he operates a lot above the cage. He's not that traditional ex-attackman. He is comfortable there, but that's not where he's best. I think he's just, like you said, up better off the wings, just so talented above the cage. And sure, could play midi, probably won't, you know, but can. He's just fluid in every sense. He's quick. He's not like, you know, blow you away fast, but he will beat you off a dodge. And when his feet are set, when he's on the run, you know, he's lights out as a shooter. So, and I think on top of that, you know, his vision is very solid. So I just like how consistent he is. Very curious to see how he does as a senior. He was a little bit down, given some injuries and just fitting into Bullis, but not to say it's a bad year at Bullis, you know, leading them to championship, but you know, not eye-popping numbers that you may you know, expect from a number one guy. Although 34-46 in a darn good league is pretty good. But yeah, I'm very high on Schellenberger. I think that just can't wait to see him at UVA.
Describe his game relative to Joey Epstein, and I ask that on two bases. The first is they both played in that same D.C. high school league, and also because Schellenberger was originally committed to Hopkins, you know, there was the prospect for a time that he was going to play alongside Epstein.
Yeah, no, I think they're different. I think that they're both, you know, comfortable from all points in the field, but, you know, Epstein is more, you know, hard-nosed, you know, tough, like run by you, you know, run over you, whatever it is. You know, Schellenberger is much more finesse. A lot of what we see from Baltimore, D.C., you know, players in this region, you know, but I think, yeah, it would have been fun to see those two together, but they can be college rivals now.
There you go. Moving along the top five, Kenny Brower, a defenseman heading to Duke, checked in at number two. Scott Bauer, a defenseman heading to Virginia, checked in at number three. Gavin Tai, a faceoff specialist, heading to Virginia at number four. And at number five, the player who we did our photo shoot with, Jake Taylor, an attackman, heading to Notre Dame. What position do you think this class is strongest at?
There's no question. I think it's defense. You know, the defensemen here, the long poles, are off the charts. I think that as I went down this list, you know, working on it and talked to, you know, college coaches, it just the depth at that position was apparent. I mean, there's got to be close to 10 D guys that are five stars in that top 22. So that's pretty substantial. You know, I don't think it's as strong of a class at attack, but I'm not picking that position. I just think it's not as strong of a class in general. You know, but yeah, I think defense is remarkable here. A lot of guys, you know, that really stand out. And with Kenny Brower, I mean, not often do you put a kid who missed the lion's share of his junior season at number two. But I really felt like if you kept him, if you put him in that position, it illustrates just how he's the best D guy, you know, far and away. You know, Brower's excellent. Frisoli, you know, Cam Henry, Blake Rogers, Donaldson, Finley, all the five stars we have are excellent. But Brower is just a savage, you know, kind of what you're used to seeing from Long Island guys and Duke players, and he's off the charts.
And to your point there, he is heading to Duke, and that puts them, it's safe to say the Blue Devils are in the lead relative to the number one class. We don't do our subjective class rankings at this point. That said, it is a new feature that we added to Inside Lacrosse that culminates or calculates the star ratings and turns them into class rankings, and the Blue Devils are right there at the top. What do you think this staff's strategy and approach was to this year?
For Duke?
Yes.
I feel like with what they're able to gain defensively, going back to that position, you know, you'll have, I guess, Cade Van Rapphorst exiting, and a pretty good 15 class. You know, guys like Brad Smith, you know, they expected to have Joey Manow in that class, be joining the 16s, but it's, I don't know, I think whatever they lose, they gain and then some. I think Dyson Williams is someone who people may not know a lot about. His father was a great player in the NLL. And, you know, Dyson's at Hill, and he's fast. He's fast. He can play attack and midi, and is a lefty. And, I mean, there have only been, I think, two Canadians to go to Duke since Zach Greer. And, you know, he's someone who I think could be an All-American, you know, for them. Comes in number eight for us and plays junior A box with Whitby. I'm a big fan. I've loved watching him play for Hill. And, you know, I think he's someone, along with some Long Island influence. It's a really, really good class for Duke, and yeah, there's no doubt that they're probably the favorite to get number one. I think you know, them and Notre Dame and UVA will all be in the running for that spot.
6 5-star players, an additional 3 4-star recruits. Basically, every player coming into this in this group is notable. And you know, you mentioned Brower, and I think the combination of him, Henry, and Frisoli certainly gives them a lot of options at the defensive position. And it's interesting because it reminds me of the class that just graduated. You know, particularly, maybe less so. That's not a good comparison. Okay, I'm going to take that back. The thing about the Peter Welch and Greg Pelton class that always impressed me was the fact that behind them came Cade VanDerMeer and JT Giles-Harris, and they became immediate starters. And then Kevin McDonough transferred in and became a starter as well. That said, you know, those two guys, Welch and Pelton, were really highly recruited players, and they found roles for themselves and became incredibly meaningful parts of the team. And so to bring in this trio of long poles in addition to the other poles that are in this class, it says to me, you know, we're going to have options and there's going to be a couple of guys that continue to emerge from this group. That said, the reason I don't think the comparison is totally fair is because, you know, I think Brower has, to your point, a little bit of VanDerMeer in him, and maybe Cam Henry has a little bit of, you know, kind of a combination, a taller Giles-Harris in him. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops in Durham, you know, particularly working with that group and settling in.
It'll be deep. It'll be very deep. I think that if you think about VanDerMeer and Giles-Harris, you know, leaving in subsequent years, and then throwing in, you know, two Under Armour All-American, you know, D guys in this past year, in these 18s, there will definitely be depth. I think there's, you know, four or five guys that can really make an impact defensively at close, and then two or three guys that can, you know, really get significant minutes at LSM. So, you know, if you're Ron Caputo and Matt Tanowski and John Tanowski, you'd be very pleased with what you have defensively in Brower for Soli and Henry, and then what you get offensively as well.
Well, one thing that we can know about Duke players is that they're smart. They managed to pass the, you know, admission standards and become future Blue Devils. You know what else is smart? Using Zip Recruiter for your hires. There are job sites that send you tons of wrong resumes to sort through. That is not smart. You know what is smart? Going to ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse to hire the right person. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes, identifies people with the right skills, education, and experience for your job, and actively invites them to apply. So you get qualified candidates fast. That's why ZipRecruiter is the number one rated job hiring site by employers in the U.S., Right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse. One more time, in case you didn't hear me, ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. One of the things about ZipRecruiter is, you know, they throw out a very wide net geographically. They go coast to coast, and in the top 27 recruits in this class of 2019, are players from the Episcopal School of Dallas, Regis Jesuit in Denver, Colorado, Oregon Episcopal School outside of Portland, Oregon, Macaulay School in Chattanooga, Tennessee, MICDS in St. Louis, Missouri, La Costa Canyon in San Diego, California, Middle Creek High School outside of Durham, North Carolina, Brother Rice High School outside of Detroit, Michigan, Ponte Vedra in Northeast Florida, and Eden Prairie in Minnesota. Ty, my question for you, is the geographical bias in recruiting dead?
I think if you look in these rankings, yeah, definitely. You know, but I think it not to piggyback on my earlier point, I know that there was like visible concern, which sounds funny, like with this diversity geographically from college coaches, because for the most part, you feel better about kids from hotbeds panning out. But yeah, I think for about half of the five stars, almost half of the top 30 to be from all over the country is huge for the sport. It's not just the Boys Latins and Chaminades and Malvern Preps and Haverfords of the world, you know, that are going through. To get this diversity is pretty cool. And I think there's a chance we could have more diversity in the Under Armour game than ever before.
So to that point, the notion of security from a hotbed player comes from, I guess, a combination of the development that he's received, presumably from his high school and probably to a slightly lesser degree, his club program, right? Like what they do emulates what a college program does more directly, and as does the season, the consistency of competition that you play throughout the year. So I guess my question is more so, you know, and then the inverse side of that is, you know, when you cast a coast-to-coast geographic net in recruiting, you can really isolate the players that have the most eye-popping athletic traits, whether it's size or speed or the combination of both and whatever else. And so the real nut of this problem is, or the thing that could affect that perception that hophead players are more secure, is if part of the reason that these players from non-traditional areas are starting to get better looks, be more in demand, and be ranked higher is not just because of their athletic traits, but because of what they've experienced and the way that they've kind of built out their skill set as players. And the one guy that I hone in on relative to that point is Alex Slusher. He played for the Ancients team at Committed Academy, seen him play a number of other times as well. He's the rep from Oregon Episcopal School. And the thing that impresses me about Slusher and his game in particular is how unimpressive he is athletically. And it's not to say that he's not an unimpressive athlete. I'm just saying that when you think about an attackman from Portland, you think about a guy like Peter Baum who has tremendous speed and quickness. Slusher reminds me more so athletically, and he's not quite as tall, and this is a really, really high comparison, so I understand the weight of it. But he reminds me athletically of Steel Stanwyck. You know, he doesn't...
It's fair.
He doesn't move super fluidly. He doesn't have this bursting change of direction, but he uses deception in order to get by guys. He uses deception in order to get open off ball. He gets the ball in and out of his stick so quickly, and he makes the correct decision, and he knows, you know, like the word deception just keeps coming back to me because he can run by you because he's faster than you think he is, and he'll also find the open man because he could throw lookaways that, you know, find guys like cutting to the crease from 25 yards out. I was just super impressed. And then the last point that I want to make relative to this is, like, you know, Stanwyck would so routinely have games where he'd be like, oh, Steele was kind of quiet today. And then you look at the box score and you realize, exactly. Yeah. And that was exactly what Slusher did at Committed Academy, and I was just so impressed by it. So I guess, you know, how does that hit you? And it's not limited to Slusher. It's open up more broadly. I mean, you know, some of these guys are freak athletes. Like you know, we talked about Cam Henry, talk about Scott Bauer. You know, it's not to say that this legacy is dead, and it's also not to say that you can't find great athletes from hotbeds, but it seems to me like as the sport has become more popular, coaches have moved into different programs, and the biggest impact is being the best high school team in your area doesn't mean that you're winning all your games 18-2 anymore. You get competition throughout the year. It might mean that you only play 6 or 8 games, and so, you know, as a result, tough games locally, so as a result, you know, that's maybe a little bit less than you find in some hotbeds, but I do think that that's a big factor in this conversation.
And I think, you know, the beauty, I mean, two things that I find, you know, great about the sport. I think the beauty of lacrosse is that, like, if you're not super athletic, super quick, super big, you can still be, you know, a top-notch recruit if you have the stick skills and IQ. You know, and some other aspects, you know, of your game come into play, but you don't need to be, you know, an eye-popping athlete. It helps, but it's not a requirement. So it definitely rings true, I think, with a couple of these players. You know, when it's not as athletic as past classes, there is, you know, just great skill level, you know, above all. And back to your point about, you know, hotbeds and the talent you play against. In club ball, like, it doesn't matter what you play during the year, you know. Sure, you may not be playing a blue chip defenseman in practice every day, but on the club circuit, you're playing the very best in the country. You know, so it almost, like, doesn't matter as much, you know, given what you play.
This class is the first one affected by the rule changes in the sense that it created a gap in communication from April until September 1st of their junior year, which was the 2017 year. How do you see that having manifested itself?
I don't think it really had a significant impact at all on this class. To me, the only guys that really ended up committing after September 1st of 2017, they were guys that were committed elsewhere and backed off of those commitments, whether before that, you know, through a third party or right around 9-1. I think it was, you know, 5 or 6 players. I think the only player I can think of that committed after 9-1 that hadn't made a verbal was Cam Henry, you know, who was one of the most coveted players, you know, in that class because he was, you know, he was still on the board. But there are about, 5 or 6 players that switched. I think that's why we talk about the 2020 class, you know, having a pretty significant, you know, impact. Because just looking down these rankings right now, you know, I'm counting, you know, 3 or 4, and almost all of them are 25 to 100 that decided after, you know, 9-1, you know, and for their initial verbals.
to that point, there are two players in the top 100 currently listed as uncommitted. Liam Powderly, attackman from McDonough in Maryland, is expected to play golf in college. And then Justin Scher, long stick, who was originally committed to Villanova, has decommitted and is currently weighing his options. You know, between Scher and then also any other drama between now and signing day in early to mid-November, what do you expect to see?
I don't really expect to see a whole lot. I think that, to me, relative to the last like 3 or 4 years, there wasn't a lot of movement when it comes to switches. And I think Shear's a big one. And you know, you and I talked about this in the car the other day. I think that I feel like there will maybe be two or three high-profile switches, you know, 4 or 5 stars. But I don't anticipate as much as last year, where there's a good amount between September of senior year and the NLI signing period. So I think it'll be a very, you know, low amount, you know, unless Parley's expecting to maybe shock the world and play lacrosse and golf. But it's funny, to that point, like, sitting the sidelines this summer, I heard probably like 4 or 5 college coaches just say something like, that's the smartest kid out there. That's the smartest kid out there. And they weren't talking about just his IQ from a lacrosse standpoint, but, you know, you're going to play a sport that you can probably make a good amount of money out of, you know, off of. And, you know, knowing Powerly for a long time.
You're talking about golf.
Golf, yeah.
not lacrosse.
Not lacrosse, you know. But, you know, Powerly, I've known him for a while. I was good buddies with his cousin Pat, who was an Under Armour All-American at my alma mater, St. Paul's, and went to Syracuse and played. You know, Liam has always been like a wonder child, you know, in golf. And, you know, for him to pick up the six and, you know, play golf in Charlottesville probably could turn into a pretty profitable career, you know, down the road. So, wish he played lacrosse. Love to see that happen, but, you know, smart kid for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting. Just the final comment about the class of 2019 is, to your point, you know, it is weird that it seems like the recruiting rule changes affected the class of 2018 and the class of 2020 more. The class of 2018 was really impacted by the fact that last summer, during the summer of 2017, because of the fact that they were, you know, 15 months out from being able to start communication with class 2020, the number of college coaches that were watching 2020s rapidly decreased. And because so many members of the class of 2019 were already committed and you couldn't talk to them during the summer, so much of the attention was paid on the class of 2018.
That's a great point.
And so as a result, you know, we saw, even if, number one, we saw a lot of activity, and there was a lot of activity that just didn't come to fruition. So there was even more activity than just the list of switch commitments would suggest. And then when you consider the fact that the, you know, there were about 130 commitments in the class of 2020 prior to the rule changes, which meant that, you know, I always think about it as roughly 650 spots, basically 10 spots per class, and about 71 programs, but obviously some are smaller or whatever. Maybe it's up to 700 Division I spots now. You know, it suggests that there was more than 500 spots available when September 1st hit in the class of 2020. And it just felt like, as a result, the class of 2019 kind of laid dormant with you know, a few of the notable exceptions, guys who had either you know, kind of opened themselves up or were uncommitted and popped during the summer of 2017. And again, I don't really have anything to say about that other than I just found it weird.
Yeah, no, and you know, I was a little shocked, you know, talking about the lesser number of you know, of switches in 19 class, the flips. I was a little shocked, but to me, talking to some guys, it just felt like a lot of them are very happy with where they committed to initially. You know, they're very content with, you know, being committed wherever they were and didn't really feel the need to look around. And some that did ended up sticking with their original commitment. So not a ton of movement since the summer, but a good amount of switches overall. You know, probably, you know, a dozen to 20 in the top 100, you know, overall.
And, you know, to that point, it kind of does dovetail into the last thing we're going to talk about, which is the commitment news. The class of 2020 continues to announce some commitments, but it's not to say that there still aren't 2019 commitments that are coming through as well. So, you know, any current high school seniors listening to this podcast, hoping for an opportunity to play college lacrosse, the opportunity is still out there for you. But I did want to talk about three guys in particular over the weekend. Two significant news items. The first, Seamus Foley out of Minnesota. Plays for Project Midwest, standout at Naptown, committed to Georgetown. Ty, what can you tell us about Foley?
He's big and lefty. I think a lot of coaches love that. You know, watching him in one of the better games I saw all summer, that attracted a ton of college coaches. You know, it was Project Midwest playing Juice Cherries. You know, battle for the Midwest and Naptown on in Upper Field, and it was a huge game. And you know, Foley was excellent. You know, playing against some really good talent. So I like him. He's very strong off the ground. I think anytime you see a hockey player play defense, their handle is remarkable, and Foley has that. He's well coached, and he's smart. You know, I think he was a really good get for Georgetown as that first verbal in the 2020 class. I think they can kind of build around him defensively along with some kids in the 19 class. So I'm a huge fan of Foley.
The next day, on September 16th, Jack Schertzer, our number 10 rated 2020, a five-star defenseman, Shorm Wading River, originally committed to Ohio State, announced that he was switching his commitment to Maryland.
Yeah, I had a pretty strong indication that he was going to make a move. And, you know, I felt like Syracuse and Maryland would be the two big boys that, you know, would try and poach him away from a program that was a national championship 2 years ago in Ohio State. And Maryland, I think, to add Schertzer, they will be able to, you know, build off of that and very early. But to me, I think that's probably the number one class. Some really, really good talent there, and it's balanced. So, Dad Schertzer, a kid who kind of sets the tone defensively and very mean, not huge by any standard, but just tenacious, you know, I think is a huge get for the Terps.
And then midweek, Michael Mauricio, player for Eclipse, who was at Midnight Mania for playing on at the University of Delaware, announced his commitment to Dartmouth. For me, this is a notable one primarily because when I watched him play, it was the first guy that really I had this thought, and I think I said it earlier on the podcast, but I was like, that guy is made for the shot clock because he's a bombing Dodger. And, you know, when Dartmouth gets the ball off an end line restart or sideline out of bounds with less than 5 seconds on the shot clock, it's like, all right, let's give this kid the ball and just see if he can go to the goal and make something happen.
Yeah, no, I feel the same way. And I think, you know, interesting with him, I think it feels like the Dartmouth connection from Brunswick School in Connecticut is pretty strong. So to add Mauricio is big for them. I think he's a very, very solid player.
Yeah, it's a group that obviously made some headlines when on September 1st they announced they were hitting the road with an RV, and you know, it'll be interesting to see how the Big Green continue to develop both their class of 2020 and move through this fall ball. The addition of Joe Connor, a longtime assistant at Bucknell, has certainly you know, kind of lit a fire around the program. And then you and I know we're pretty high on their incoming 2018 class in terms of guys that can make an immediate contribution. So, you know, relative to recent years, certainly one to keep an eye on for the Big Green. All right, Ty, that'll do it for this edition of the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Once again, we thank everybody for listening. Hit us up on Twitter at Terrence Foy, at Ty Zanders. If you like what you heard, leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And we will be back next week with more podcasts for you.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.